It often affects those with diabetes. So we're discussing diabetic vascular disease. Our guest is Dr. William Veal. He's a vascular surgeon with Jackson Hospital. This is Vital Signs, candid conversations with providers who care. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joey Waller. Hi, Dr. Veal. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Appreciate the time. So first, in a nutshell, what is diabetic vascular disease? Just how common is it among those with diabetes?
Diabetic vascular disease affects most small vessels in the entire body. So anything larger than a capillary on up to full-size vessels like the aortic carotids and leg arteries. And who is affected are pretty much anybody with diabetes. Sometimes even folks who have what's known as pre-diabetes, which are the early warning signs of diabetes. I always tell patients it's like speeding. You may not get a ticket for it, but you're a speeder if you're even 1 mile over. And a lot of times pre-diabetes is like that.
Understandable analogy there. So how is this disease first recognized? What are its symptoms?
So a lot of folks present with difficulty walking, or they can have severe diabetic disease in patients who don't regularly see a physician and who aren't checked, and they can have diabetes unannounced, and they might have had it for 10 years. So obviously important to have a primary care physician who would regularly check for that. But the lack of blood flow to the feet or pain with walking is what we commonly see.
And so when does that part of it vascularly get to the point where a doctor like yourself needs to intervene?
Anytime there's a lack of blood flow or unable to be palpated pulses, we need to be involved. And then depending on the percentage of reduction of blood flow, we can make a decision how to proceed.
So you said most anyone with diabetes could be susceptible to this. Who are those that are most at risk?
Anybody with a history of uncontrolled diabetes, anybody with a period of time where they did not know they had diabetes, then obviously, you know, people with a higher, what we call A1C, which is a measurement of the lack of control. So the more uncontrolled, the more high the sugars are for the longer period of time, the more damage can be caused to the blood vessels by that abnormal milieu, so to speak.
So how exactly is diabetic vascular disease diagnosed? It would appear as though it wouldn't be that difficult, right?
Historically, that would be physical exam. That's how, you know, we're all taught in medical school to approach patients. But in this day and age, it's very hard for physicians to do a full every system exam on the whole entire body through physical exam. And studies have shown that clinical, physical, bedside exam skills don't always translate to what the studies find. So we start with a physical exam, but then we work our way up with ultrasound tests and then more advanced imaging after that.
How important is it, doctor, to get that diagnosis before the effects of this really escalate and become more dangerous?
So any disease process, just like a problem with your car, the sooner you catch it, the better off you are. You have awareness, you have knowledge, you can make changes that are conservative. Once the severe injury or damage over long periods of time has happened to blood vessels, then you have longer, more difficult procedures to restore flow to multiple areas.
What other issues, if untreated, can this lead to?
Smoking kind of overlaps with that. So, you know, if you've had years of smoking and you have vascular disease blockages, that can contribute. Lack of walking, sedentary lifestyle, all the things that we know simply that are good to do, we don't do. And the things that we know we shouldn't do, we like to do.
Very well put, and unfortunately affects so many of us. So speaking of which, what would you say is the number one thing that people can do on their own to prevent this condition?
Well, walking, you know, I always tell patients a mile a day keeps the vascular surgeon away. So if you can average over a mile a day of walking, you know, a lot of people say, well, I walk at work. And really that doesn't count. You've got to be doing something for yourself outside of your work hours, not just for your physical health, but for your mental health. So And it doesn't have to be running marathons. You know, everybody, well, I can't do that. But anybody, almost anybody with two legs can walk, you know, at least a half a mile a day, and ideally a mile a day, just for the sake of walking and your health.
Absolutely, your health in general. And when we talk about walking in this respect, if possible, a brisk walk, right? Not a walk like you would take if you were going out to get the mail, yes?
I'll take anything in my patience, you know. I mean, you know, in the Deep South, we use the heat in the summer as an excuse not to get out, and that's understandable. But the fall is coming. The winter here is a great time to walk. We really, you know, you can exercise and be outside 12 months of the year here in Alabama.
Interesting you say that, because in the North, where I'm located, people use the cold as an excuse not to get more exercise outside, right?
Believe it or not, people down here will say the same thing. They'll say, oh, it's too cold, you know, but the truth is that living in the South, we can be outside, you know. I mean, look at the golfers, they play year round.
So a few other things, what treatments are available for this, be it medication and or surgery?
So from a medication standpoint, it's fairly limited. You know, we recommend blood thinners for anyone with significant vascular disease, which you would obviously have to talk about with your physician and your medical physician, as well as your vascular physician. But as far as procedures, you know, we have minimally invasive procedures, and then we have traditional open surgery bypasses. Much like they have heart bypass, we can do leg bypasses and things of that nature.
When we talk about blood thinners, that's something that needs to be managed very carefully under a physician's care, right? And once it's started, it's got to be done consistently. Am I right?
Yes, 100%. We prefer that the medical doctors manage the blood thinners because they are the captain of the ship of their patient's health care. But in specific areas or areas where our expertise is warranted, you sometimes have to strike a balance between thinning the blood and safety and lack of bleeding. So clearly it's a discussion to be had with your primary care physician, but also with the assistance of cardiologists, vascular surgeons.
And when we talk about surgery in this instance, what would that involve?
Well, for diabetic small vessel disease, you know, we're typically talking about in the legs. And so that would be an endovascular approach or outpatient angiogram, which we call a leg cath, and can be minimally invasive and can be same day. And then it can be range from that all the way up to a full-fledged long bypass of the vessel, you know, preferably using vein, but also could be with alternative conduit materials and management, you know, because you have to balance any risk of a procedure with the benefit.
These vascular issues in diabetic patients, this is just one example, am I right, doctor, of how if you are diabetic, it opens you up potentially to a myriad of other related medical problems. It often becomes kind of a balancing act of trying to manage a number of different things, right?
Correct. So diabetics, they have vision problems, they can have kidney problems, they have vascular disease elsewhere. They have, you know, a diabetic has the same risk factors as a lifelong smoker. The things that are bad for you, you know, we all know smoking's bad for you, but, you know, sugar is just as bad for you. And the awareness is there, but, you know, for those of us who grew up, you know, on Coca-Cola, which is, you know, 3 tablespoons of sugar in a 12-ounce soda, you know, we're habituated to it. You know, the first lobby in America supposedly was the sugar lobby.
Interesting. And then in summary here, doctor, what's your best advice to those joining us that may be at risk for this, that perhaps for whatever reason aren't taking it seriously? As you well know, many are afraid to go to the doctor. Many dread bad news. They procrastinate. Unless it's really knocking on the door of their life, so to speak, they may be putting it on the back burner. Tell people why they need not to do that.
You know, we see folks that have avoided healthcare for a long period of time. And if you're a diabetic and you don't know it, the first time you see me, baby, when I remove your leg. And that just doesn't have to happen. And it's sad because we want to help people. And we want to do simple, easy outpatient procedures. I treat patients the way I want to be treated. And so we would much prefer to have an easy, small outpatient type case, or even just monitoring and conversations about healthy lifestyle rather than removing a leg. And that happens, you know, removing legs, strokes, heart attacks, you know, all those things that we fear, more and more we're realizing, yeah, sure, smoking causes all that, but sugar is just as bad. And so is being sedentary.
And just to follow up on that real quick, you make a great point, because am I right that when people do need to have a leg removed, isn't it often because, for whatever reason, their health care has been neglected? It could be because of other issues in their life. It could be being uninsured or underinsured. Yes?
Yeah, we have folks frequently that the processes have been going on for 20 to 30 years. And by that, I mean disease, uncontrolled diabetes. And so having lack of care creates a lot more costs for us as a society than really can be acknowledged. And so, you know, you can say, well, all those people, they created their own problems. But the problem is that all of us then have to take care of an invalid potentially for another 20 or 30 years. You know, we don't want to get into too heavy a political discussion, but people without health care are very unhealthy, and they require more dollars and more care and more difficult care that theoretically could be avoided with simpler, progressive, but simple, you know, common sense stuff that if they were just talking to their doctor, they might be able to do.
Absolutely. Something that I'm sure you and yours see far too often. Well, folks, we trust you are now more familiar with diabetic vascular disease. Dr. Veal, always a pleasure. Thanks so much again.
Thank you, sir.
And for more information, please visit jacksonclinic.org/specialty-care/vascular-surgery. Now, if you found this podcast helpful, please do share it on your social media. Thanks again for being part of Vital Signs, candid conversations with providers who care.